Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
House Judiciary Committee is convening at 1:08. In attendance, Representative Gruenberg, Representative Lynn, Representative Coghill, myself, Representative Ramirez, Vice Chair Dahlstrom. I see Representative Holmes entering the room, and I'm sure we'll be joined by Representative Samuel shortly. As is our custom, we will begin by taking public testimony from 1 until 1:30. Do we have people online today? Yes, we do. Okay. Can I get that list, please? And then we'll take public testimony from 1 until 1:30, and then from 1:30 until 2. We're going to be working with Mr. Dave Shaftel online regarding blind trusts, and Representative Paul Seaton will make a brief presentation at that time also. Representative Holmes, nice to see you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chairman,
uh-huh.
The record is actually Shaftel.
Shaftel. Oh, yes. Sorry. My apologies. Okay. All right, and Representative Newman is not here today, right? He's tied
he's
up until 2:00.
Too.
Okay. All right. Very good. So, just again for housekeeping, we're going to open things up for public testimony. I have five people that want to speak, from four from Local 71 and one for themselves. We will take limited testimony. We'd like to limit it to about 3 minutes per person. And with regard to, I assume, since these are from the locals, this is with regard to the nepotism amendment. For those that are listening at LIO, Representative Gruenberg has indicated that he will be offering this amendment.
I think Representative Lynn may do.
I already offered it. It's on the table. We were debating it.
Correct.
So it's already on the table.
Point taken. That's right. Point taken. It's on the table. So it's been tabled, and I did speak to the administration about that this morning. John Bitney, the governor's legislative director, and we came up with a statement. I feel comfortable to say that I do not believe that this ethics bill is the place for this amendment regarding nepotism. In this legislation, we are dealing with clearly defining and drawing bright lines as to what is ethical. This bill is not the place for a nepotism amendment, is the opinion of the chair. However, I have personally spoken with the executive branch regarding this nepotism issue. They have assured me that they are using their administrative authority to deal with fixing this problem. A new opinion dealing with how frontline management should interpret the nepotism rules should eliminate the problem that the local 71 has brought to this committee's attention. Nevertheless, we're delighted to take public testimony on this issue. Representative Dahlstrom.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to state on the record for everyone to hear, and then also for Representative Lynn, if after the testimony, if you wish to withdraw the amendment, I'll be happy to work with you on an individual piece of legislation for pertaining to this. So just.
Through the chair, you're going to make a statement now or what?
No, I just made my statement that I'm happy. Oh. If you choose to withdraw this
mm-hmm.
as an amendment
mm-hmm.
to this particular bill, I will be happy to work with you to create an individual bill.
Well, I'd like to see, through the chair, I'd like to see where this is going. Because what happens on the, first of all, I think it is an ethics bill, which we all strongly support in one way or another. But fairness to work is also an ethical issue. And I think we need to consider that these people, many of these people, are trying to hold a job now, trying to get a job, and they need to have this thing be resolved as quickly and as equitably as possible. And I think this ethics bill, I believe, is going to make it out of the legislature sooner rather than later. And I think it would be the place to put that. But I would like to have some of the folks I know who are online to testify on this thing, maybe give us some more of the insight. We can discuss that, and then we'll go wherever the committee wants to go. But I think it's a good amendment. I still think it is.
Yes, I think it will affect their bargaining abilities, so I don't know if it's in their best interest to address it this way, and I think it'll be the judgment of the various members whether it should be a piece of individual legislation introduced later, but we shall find out. Let's proceed online. Again, if we can hold the testimony to 3 minutes, we would be grateful, as public testimony will be closing at 1:30. First is Megan Kruchik, I think, if I pronounced your name correctly. Megan, I apologize if I didn't. If you'd introduce yourself for the record.
Hi, I'm Megan Kruchik.
Go ahead, please. She's with Local 71.
Yeah, I'm with Local 71.
On the nepotism stuff.
Do you want me just to start?
Oh, yes, go ahead, please.
Oh, okay, sorry. I worked for the state for two seasons in 2003 and 2004 as a flagger out of the Soldotna DOT department. I was called back to work in 2005, but when I got there, they said that I was not able to for nepotism reasons. So Carl High sent in some paperwork, hopefully to approve me to go back to work, and it went up the chain of command, and it was at the end decided that I couldn't go back to work. So I talked to some union representatives, and I filed a grievance about it. And the union fought for me, and over the next year, through an arbitration, it was decided that, in fact, it was nepotism. I could not work. I really appreciated working for the state. It was a great job for someone my age. I was in college at the time, and you know, it helped pay for my tuition. It gave me enough money to where I could just get a part-time job and make it through comfortably. It was a good job all around. Let's see. I just didn't feel it was fair. I had worked for the state for 2 years. My father works for the state also, but I went through the same process that anybody else would go through, took the flagging class, signed up with the union, waited on the list till I was called out. It just put me in a bind, especially that year. I had a child, and I hadn't made any other arrangements for the 2005 year for any other work, expecting to still work for the state. It was a great salary. It was good security. Because I didn't get that job, I had to take out student loans, so now I have student loan debts, and whereas before I was able to pay for my tuition with the money that I made from the state, I figured that when you join a union and you pay your dues, you shouldn't be punished because you have a family member who works for the state also, because it wasn't a favoritism thing. I went through the same process that everybody else did. I would appreciate being able to work for the state again. So...
Thank you, Megan. Are you eligible for rehire with the state of Alaska?
I don't know. They say that I can't because of nepotism. Last year I was called out to work again. Also went through the same process of not being able to because of nepotism. So.
Thank you very much for taking time out of your day. Are there any questions for Megan? Megan, we thank you for taking time to testify before us. We appreciate it. If we can move on to Eartha Fierro, please. If you'll introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Eartha Fierro, and I worked for the state for three seasons. And this past season, in 2005, I passed the test so I could become a permanent member. And they filled my paperwork out, sent it in, and then they said because I have an aunt that works for the state that I wouldn't be eligible. Then they said if I decided not to take my promotion and stay a non-permanent, I would still be able to work. And then I was given the runaround and saying, no, I'm sorry, now we've put a freeze on it, and you're not going to be able to work at all this season. I had great recommendations from my supervisors. It was a great job. I had fun. But I don't think I should be penalized because I went through the process just like everybody else. And now they're saying that the only way that I could get hired is if I worked in Fairbanks, and I live in Wasilla. So that's, like, going to be a lot of driving for me. And then if I stayed up there, I'd have to pay for my own living. And pretty much I'd be working to pay for my living. And I don't think I should be penalized for that.
Yes. Are there any questions for Ms. Fierro? Ms. Fierro, there are no questions. Thank you very much for taking time out of your day to testify in front of House Judiciary Committee. Is Daniel Chappelle there, please? And can I recognize that Representative Gardner is in the room with us?
Yes, my name is Dan Chappell. I work out of 16, 17 years now out of DOT up here at Taslena. Due to the nepotism rules here, I had wanted to transfer back over to M&O. The mechanic, as I get older, a little harder on my body, and I just needed a change of pace, so I tested, had a job lined up. There was an opening here at Taslena, and due to the fact that my girlfriend of 16 years or so now, she works in admin in M&O at the same camp, I was refused the transfer. The reasons stated were that she could, say, manipulate timesheets or schedules, which is inaccurate. And you know, it actually was kind of rude to her to say that she would be that unethical as well. But anyhow, the foreman does all the inputs in MMS and does all the scheduling. And work assignments. You know, she has no authority over any of these types of things. Anyhow, the fact that I wasn't able to take the job, you know, puts me back in the shop. You know, at a job that I say is starting to wear on me over the years. You know, just wear and tear being heavy equipment mechanic. And like I say, it seemed like we were both being, you know, told that we weren't ethical in the respect that we would take or make any kind of, I guess my thing is that you would, you know, make use of any kind of preferences that she could or would do, but in the fact that she's really not in the position to do any of that. I also, when the area manager gave me his refusal of the position, he wrote me a letter here that I'd like to read, and he said he would like to thank me for my interest in signing the posting for the 53 operator position. Although my seniority and qualifications were met and exceeded, my request was denied because of kindred relationship between me and Jetty, as her working in M&O staff as well. There would have been no pay change. I'm a 53 mechanic. I would have been a 53 operator, so it was no financial gain or loss for the state in any respects. But again, I've worked for the state for many years and got great references, and you know, all the jobs that I have done for the state, I've had, you know, nothing but praise for my work ethic, and I just felt like by doing a good job and doing the best I could all these years and trying to make a change for the better, I was, because of Jetty working in M&O, I was shortchanged, and I just think it's, as I hear about more and more people in the same boat, I wanted to voice my opinion on this, and I guess that's the extent of my statement.
Thank you, Dan. We appreciate you taking time out of your day. Are there any questions for Mr. Chappell?
I just wanted to ask if I may.
Representative Lynn?
What two departments did you work at? Taslena, is that between Lynn Allen and Togue? I'm trying to get my geography straight.
Yes, Glen Allen. We're in the Togue, Glen Allen, Valdez, impacts in Neltina in our area here.
Right, I drove through there, through the chair, coming back special session last year, one of many trips. what's the population where you live?
Approximately 3,500 people, and that's the Copper River Basin. That's from Solana to Paxson to Eureka, and then down to Ernestine area, and then Chittenden and McCarthy.
And just one last question. Specifically, what job did you have, and what job did your girlfriend have?
Judy works in admin, M&O. She's an administrative clerk, I guess is what the position is.
Clerk.
So we still work in the same building. She's still, you know, I'm working for SEF, and she's working for M&O, and she's actually not even 71. She's ASEA, her union. So that was the other thing that I thought was, you know, kind of off base. We aren't even in the same union, and she has no supervisory duties, you know. But yet, for having done a good job, and M&O wanted me, they were disgusted with not being able to get me over there as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking time to tell us your point of view, Dan. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for listening.
Yes, sir. It's 25 minutes after. We have three more people that would like to speak. Is there anybody here in the audience here for public testimony? I don't see anyone. Paul Kendall, you're next, Mr. Kendall.
You know, first, this is Paul Kendall, but there's an attorney here that might want to take precedence, and I have no problem conveying that to her, if that's all right with you gentlemen.
Sure.
Thank you. Hi, this is Heidi Dragas. I just wanted to be able to respond after the folks from Local 71 had a chance to testify.
Certainly, Heidi, we'll be glad to give you a little bit of time. Paul, do you want to make some public comment?
I would like to, but I think it's more important that she take precedence.
We'll provide you the liberty. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to highlight what these folks are saying. I mean, basically, this is how the Ethics Act is affecting everyday working folks. None of these people had supervisory responsibility over any family members. I think this amendment is absolutely appropriate in this bill because it's the Ethics Act that is preventing state employees from taking these jobs. It's not just simply about bargaining ability. It's not really about bargaining ability whatsoever. It's just about how this act is affecting everyday working Alaskans. I just wanted to take an opportunity to respond to Mr. Jones's comments from yesterday regarding the amendment and just to address some of the committee members' concerns. I think there's a little bit of confusion about what this amendment is going to do. All state employees that we represent, they all fall under the executive branch because they work for the administration under its various departments. So they all fall under the purview of the Executive Branch Ethics Act. This amendment will restore the longstanding policy that would prevent family members from supervising other family members, but would allow working relationships between family members as long as neither one is a supervisor of the other. It addresses lower-level non-supervisory employees and not mid- or upper-level management.
Would you say that part again, please?
What we're trying to say is that this amendment is addressing lower-level, non-supervisory employees, and it is not addressing mid- or upper-level management positions. All of those positions are supervisory positions, and we have no problem with preventing family members from working together when one is a supervisor over the other. I mean, for example, one of these situations that we have are two flaggers aren't able to work together on the same crew because they're family members, even though they're the same wage grade, neither one of them has authority over the other. Right now, the state is preventing that from happening, but this amendment would fix that problem. And I don't think it's the intent of the act to have this type of effect on everyday working folks. Mr. Jones noted his concerns over allowing employees to recommend promotions and transfers, assign overtime, perform evaluations on family members. But there is a distinct difference between a supervisor with a capital S and a leadman or foreman on a crew. And these types of tasks are routine in nature. They are either governed by the collective bargaining agreement or they must be approved by a supervisor. For example, overtime is strictly governed by a collective bargaining agreement, so a foreman would have no wiggle room because overtime is governed by equalization in the contract. Transfers are also governed by the collective bargaining agreement. Foremen routinely recommend transfers and perform evaluations, but both of these tasks must be reviewed independently and approved by a supervisor. A foreman has no ability to take independent action in the area of discipline, layoffs, transfers, dispute resolution. I mean, these are the things we typically think of as supervisory responsibilities.
Heidi, what capacity are you in for public employee, Local 71?
I'm general counsel.
Very good. I don't know that you disclosed that to us in previous days, but we're delighted.
Oh, I'm sorry. In my memorandum, the memorandum that I had sent to your office, I'm general counsel for Public Employees Local 71. I'm general counsel for the Alaska District Council of Laborers.
Okay. Very good. We appreciate it. I still have John Farley that wants to speak after you, so if you could kind of put a punctuation on your remarks, but feel free to conclude your point.
Sure. Thank you very much. I also want to address Mr. Jones had referred to the March 2005 memo that came out of the AG's office, which talked about how the Ethics Act applied to employees working in a supervisory subordinate role. But that memo analyzes a supervisory subordinate relationship. I mean, according to Mr. Jones, the Department of Administration's new policy was enacted in response to that memorandum, but it went so much further. I mean, it essentially eliminated nearly all employment relationships between family members. In a state like communities like Tok and Northway, Nome and Taslina, where this policy is having a huge impact, it's just not working. I think what we have to remember and come back to is the language of the Ethics Act, which meant to distinguish between, quote, minor and inconsequential conflicts and those that are, quote, substantial and material. And in my opinion, these are simply not the substantial and material conflicts that were envisioned under the Act. Okay. But this is the problem that's being caused by the Ethics Act. So I think this amendment is absolutely appropriate within this bill, okay, because the bill is the one that's causing the problem for these employees.
Okay, thank you very much. Are there any questions for Ms. Dragas? Thank you, Ms. Dragas. Is Mr. Farley there, please?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Uh-huh.
Hi, my name is John Farley. I'm testifying from Anchorage. I represent myself and I suppose my children. I testified in House State Affairs about in their working version K of Section 5, and in the House State Affairs Committee substitute that passed out of committee, that section seems to be entirely missing. The point of that section was to add a new subsection that read, the spouse or domestic partner of a legislator may not engage in an activity as a lobbyist. Now, in the newest version here, all it's doing is requiring a lobbyist to identify a legislator who the lobbyist might be married or be a domestic partner with. I think this is a step in the wrong direction. The fact is that I know you don't like to speak about individual cases or legislators, but I can tell you at least two instances where the appearance certainly was that the spouse of a legislator who happened to be a lobbyist did in fact influence legislation through their spouse, and I think this is an unwise step. I personally believe that not only should the spouse or domestic partner of a legislator not be allowed to be a lobbyist, I believe any immediate family member should be disallowed.
Mr. Farley, we've dealt with this through an amendment already, I believe.
I'm terribly sorry. I might have missed that part.
But your point is well taken by all the members of this committee, and the director of APOC is nodding her head. So your point is quite well made.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Farley. All right, and with regard to Amendment 24, which is tabled at this point,
25 or 24.
Hello.
Yes. Hello.
This is Paul Kendall.
Yes, Paul. Yes.
I stepped out of the room briefly to make sure that Jody had sent you an email yesterday on a paper called Ethics, which I drafted. And I guess, I don't know, Mr. Marley was talking, or do I still have an opportunity to make comment?
Yes, we've gone past 1:30, so if you can be brief, but please.
Well, I guess, first of all, my concern would be, did you get my document titled Ethics, a roughly drafted proposal?
Representative Gruenberg is nodding that yes, we did.
I was eagerly waiting to hear your perspective on that, and I take a somewhat different perspective. That is, that things are becoming so complex, you need to go back to some type of a sophisticated or evolutionary position, similar to no contest, which allows people to make a judgment about the other person's character, which in essence would symbolize something along the strains of a family organization. Most of our society is based upon the conveyances like a family, but we seem to have just lawyered the thing up so complex to where the average person is beyond their capacity to understand anyway. So I do appreciate the need for specificity and content. And I'd like to just read a rough statement in here, and I'll be done and over with unless you have questions, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. On this document I sent you, this is part and parcel of that. It has become common knowledge to us, the general citizenry, that many of those to whom we have conveyed the highest honor in the land are failing us in their representation of our public's business affairs and matters, thereby jeopardizing our general welfare, safety, well-being, and the pursuit of happiness. The time has come for us citizens to impose a higher standard of expectations and performances from our public servants' behaviors. And in order to achieve a greater degree of responsible, honest, fair, and truthful conduct, we must declare, design, and impose a higher magnitude of penalty. We must give our jury system the latitude, discretion, to make the final determination of a description of a public servant's deeds as either honorable conduct or less than honorable conduct, along with the severest penalties, fines, and actions, so as to stop the continuing malaise of corrupted conduct by our public servants. If we do not protect and establish integrity and value for the fundamental laws that govern our society and hold accountable those we elect to represent those values and us with honorable conduct, then we have in essence undermined our entire legal system and the very fabric of our society. We must in all fairness set a bar and a standard that gives a clear and obvious forewarning and notification that any public servant who betrays the full faith and trust of the general citizenry will pay a heavy and just price with short and long-term impacts and consequences in an expedient manner of trial and sentencing. How can we hold to accountability the common criminal for an impact born out of an act of desperation while we let those who represent the highest law and honor of the land go nearly scot-free for an act of unmitigated greed and self-indulgence with impacts far beyond what the individual criminal might do? In closing, I believe the time is of the essence, or at least at hand for us today, to end this historical, continuing, and ongoing betrayal of the public's conveyances of their full faith and trust in our public leadership. I realize that I have focused primarily on our need to and means of judgment and penalties here in this writing. Because we have to begin our work on those foundational aspects to begin correcting our political representations, infrastructure, and process. Those fundamental aspects being the establishment of clear and meaningful reward and punishment for one's actions. And just one more little thing here. This goes to reference to the act relating to campaign financing. It is my conclusion that we must designate a cable TV channel or political channel and require that all those seeking an elected seat or political office present themselves on this channel before the public. They will be required to be sworn in and held to the laws of perjury, slander, lies, and sources of information and comment designation. They must use yes and no when called for, tested on their awareness, knowledge, and interpretation of the Constitution of Alaska and America, and held to pledges of performance as promised unless publicly accepted, mitigating circumstances arise. They may proceed to their theatrics in the open media, but they will adhere to much higher standards on our mandatory official people's election campaign channel, which is long overdue. And I thank you so much. I think I went over, and that's all I had to say, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. You're very eloquent, Mr. Kendall. Thank you for taking the time. You're welcome to testify anytime in front of this committee. We're happy to have your input. With that, we're going to close public comment at 1:37. With regard to the tabled Amendment 24, I want to say again, I do not believe that this ethics bill, House Bill 109 that is before us, which is the governor's ethics bill, is the place for this amendment or this issue. In this specific piece of legislation that we are dealing with, we are clearly defining and drawing bright lines as to what is ethical. This bill is not the place for this amendment. However, I have personally spoken with the executive branch, with John Bitney, the legislative director, on this nepotism issue. He has assured me that they are using their administrative authority to deal with fixing this problem. A new opinion dealing with how frontline management should interpret this nepotism rule should eliminate the problem that the Local 71 has brought to this committee's attention. We do not take this issue lightly. I thank all the members from Public Employees Local 71 for bringing this before us. Our phone number here is 465-3004. If you will give us a couple of weeks, we will follow up with the executive branch to make sure that this is in the process of being addressed. I do respect the members of the committee when we take it up off the table. If members still wish to have this amendment come before us and have it voted on, that is the right of any committee member. With that, I'd like to get on to our 1:30.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Lynn.
I would like to respond to that, if I may.
Yes.
First of all, I very much respect the administration and those who are speaking for it. We have a very good relationship, and I think they're trying to do what they can, basically without statutory authority, as I understand it. We've spent a lot of time in this committee and other committees trying to look out for the ability of folks to make a living. How can a citizen legislator, make a living and abide by all these ethics rules? How can an attorney make a living and abide by all the ethics rules? And lobbyists and so on, and these are very valid concerns. But I think it's also ethical to look out for the little guy. How can they make a living out in Tasmania or other location like that? How can they also make a living? I think that's ethical responsibility that we need to consider, and I think this bill is the place to do it.
Okay. Point taken, Representative Lynn. We will come back to that as we take up amendments. Now we'd like to hear from Mr. Dave Sheftel and Representative Seaton on blind trust. Gentlemen, if you'll...
Yeah, they're going to take it up.
We will, as we take up amendments.
Yeah, okay, fine.
We're scheduled for the blind trust.
No problem.
Portion. Yes, Representative Seaton, and Mr. Sheftel is with us online, is that correct? Mr. Sheftel, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Dave Sheftel. With me is another attorney in our office, Larry Biskowski. Both of us have been asked to participate in this hearing by Jean Pearson in your office. Just to respond to questions or give you some general comments concerning the blind trust provisions of this statute.
Okay, and if you'll stand by, please, Mr. Sheftel, we're delighted to have you. We'd like to hear from Representative Seaton. Representative Seaton, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. For the record, my name is Paul Seaton. I'm representative from District 35. The blind trust statute that we have currently is really problematic because it's so general that a person is going to get in trouble if they use it. The perfect example is we now require disclosures of anything you own to certain limits. However, if you use a blind trust, there's no exemption in our current statute that you don't have to report what you also are not supposed to know about. So we worked very hard with the committee to try to clean up the blind trust statute so that it could be available for administrative officials. And I guess the easiest example is you think of somebody like the Commissioner of Revenue. You would anticipate that if we have somebody of very high caliber that has had a lot of experience in business and all, they're going to have quite a bit of assets.